Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 222, all the Seuss, of Geek Town Radio. Back this week with Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good, David. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So what have you been up to the last week? There's been lots of news around.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, speaking of my little intro thing, I do actually have my 24 shirt on today. So that's an interesting coincidence.
Very good.
Just saw it and thought, you know, why not? Why not put it on?
Yes.
But yes, other than watching Man United play terrible football like we did yesterday, I've been watching, finished watching Unbelievable on Netflix, which is a mini limited series. So it's a shame that it won't be coming back because it was absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Although it's based on a true story, so it's kind of difficult to make more of them. But I know what you mean. I could stand to watch more of those characters. They were really good.
Definitely. Yeah, especially Merritt Weaver, who plays the detective.
Yes.
Who did very, very well. Speaking of her, she doesn't win an Emmy next year. Just cancel them. Just cancel the Emmys because she really deserves to win it next year. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, of course, you know, what does get nominated next year and stuff. But like I said, I don't only want her to get nominated. I want her to definitely win it. And, you know, if she doesn't, then just don't bother doing the Emmys next year because she really deserves it.
She was great.
Yeah. Yeah, a very, very impactful show, which it is kind of supposed to be as well. And, you know, I've still been kind of thinking about the show and all the kind of messages and everything else that the show is trying to kind of get across to and whatnot. I mean, it's supposed to be a show like that when you base it on, you know, a true story and a kind of a horrific event. It's supposed to kind of leave you with a bit of a different feeling as to, oh, yeah, I watched that thing in terms of leaving me with an impact, leaving me kind of thinking about the show afterwards, both in good and in bad ways, obviously, because it was a bad thing that happened, but the TV show is very, very good, so you've got a positive and a negative there. Because I remember in the little review I did, I kind of said, like, it is weird to come away from a show that has a subject matter such as what it does and to kind of be like, yeah, this show's like really phenomenal because it is a very, very good television show, but I understand that the weird nature around saying, okay, this is really incredible, but given the fact of what it's based on, so
it's kind of strange in that way. It is weird, but it makes a really interesting drama, and they did such a good job with it. And Toni Collette, I thought, was great as well, and Caitlin Dever, who was Marie Adler, Merritt Weaver, I thought was brilliant. I'm very much with you. She should. I don't know what the competition will be like for the Emmys next year on the limited series, because that's always quite a tough category. But she should at least get a nomination. I mean, it definitely should be in there. But I know. I thought that was an absolutely phenomenal series.
It's interesting because when someone says to me, oh, you know, what would you recommend I watch? I say like, oh, definitely go and watch Unbelievable, but like with caution, obviously, because of the subject matter. So again, a little bit weird to discuss it in that kind of way, but hopefully that will make sense.
Yes.
So definitely go and watch that if I haven't already made that clear. So absolutely incredible TV show and probably one of the top two shows of the year. Of course, we'll do obviously our best of stuff at the end of the year in December when other things have come out, but certainly up there at the moment for me. So
yeah, definitely.
Gears of War 5, or Gears 5 as it's been kind of nicknamed for short, I suppose, which is fine. Came out on Xbox. It is available on Game Pass, so if you've got £8 or £8, you can go and sign up for Game Pass, and there's also like hundreds of other games on there as well, which you can go and get, of course, on the Xbox One. And it's on, I think you can play that probably on PC as well, because they do the cross stuff.
Pretty much everything on Xbox, I think, is pretty much available on PC PC as well at this point. So
yeah, the Game Pass itself you can actually get on PC as well, so that kind of helps with that.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, if you've got that amount of money, you can go and sign up for that, and you can just install Gears of War, I guess, for free with the subscription, which is interesting. But yeah, I'm a big Gears of War fan. I've liked it since I've obviously played the first one, and I'm one of the few people that did like the prequel that they had, because they've obviously had Gears 1-5, and they had a game called Gears of War Judgment, which was a prequel, which I quite liked as well. Some people didn't like it, some people did. It's interesting with Gears of War, because I remember after Gears of War 3, they kind of finished the war that they were in at the time, which was, I think, with the Locust. And then Gears of War 4 kind of came out, and I was like, oh, I thought they were like finished with the series, because it ended in a very sort of climactic, way.
Finite, kind of
concluded. But I guess their excuse with Gears of War 4 was kind of, okay, these characters are still out there doing stuff, and that war is finished, but now a new war has started, and Gears of War 5 kind of continues the war from Gears of War 4.
Right.
There's some stuff going on with the protagonist, Kate, which is some interesting stuff. I can't really mention any of it, because if I mention anything as to what it is, it will give away some spoilery stuff. Interested to see where that goes, because I've not actually finished the game yet, but I think I'm like right at the end. I've just got to a scene where there's about to be a big war piece, and it looks like kind of the last bit of the game, so we'll see what happens with that. You know who Raoul Cooley is, don't you, from iZombie?
Oh right, yes.
He's in this game as well, so that's really good.
Oh cool.
He plays a character called Fars, I think his name is. He did a great job in that. But it's interesting with Gears, because this is a franchise that comes out every 3 to 4 years roughly, because they kind of try to sort of cycle that with obviously Halo, Xbox's other big franchise.
Right, yeah.
Because Halo's coming out next year, and Gears obviously came out this year in September. And I always kind of forget how much I like Gears of War, and then Gears of War 5 came out, and I was like, oh, I'll get to it in a bit. I had some other things to play, and then jumped into Gears of War 5 and got kind of back into the momentum of it, and thought like, oh yeah, I remember, like, I really love this game. Just continued to really enjoy Gears 5, and really enjoying that at the moment. Probably my game of the year so far, but we're in that busy period where a bunch of games are about to come out.
Yes, there's stuff coming out before the end of the year.
Yeah. So in the tall grass, some of you might not have even heard of this, because Netflix has trouble lately telling people all the things that they're releasing.
Yes, they don't even tell the press the things that they're releasing at this point. So yeah, we hear about half of the stuff when you do. So.
Right. I mean, there's a Breaking Bad film out on Friday. I don't know how many people know about that, because I haven't seen much discussion.
We have posted a bit about that, yes.
Right. I mean, it was kind of filmed in secret or whatever, but it was announced months ago. And then, of course, Netflix said that they've got it, and then they set the October date. So yeah, it's weird with Netflix as to like how many different series and things people don't know are actually on there. Like how many people know that Unbelievable is on Netflix and in the Tall Grass, and that know that El Camino's out on Friday and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I saw a trailer for this pop up on, because I follow obviously Netflix on Facebook, and they post those playable videos or whatever for their trailers, and it said here's in the Tall Grass, which is, by the way, based on a book by Stephen King, not a small name, just to kind of let everybody know that as well. So they come up with this trailer just like, hey, just let you know we got this little film based on this book by this great big guy. And they posted that about, I want to say, 2 months ago or a month ago roughly, and then didn't hear anything else about it. I can't remember them posting a date in the trailer, and then went to watch Good Place on Fridays as I usually do. And then Netflix does the usual thing where they put a trailer at the front of when you log in, and it was just like, here it is in the Tall Grass. I was like, oh yeah, this thing exists and is coming out, or is available for me to play right now. But very, very good film. It's essentially basically about these people get lost in Tall Grass, and it sounds very, very simple, but things do get very, very interesting with it. And I can't really talk too much about that much of it without spoiling stuff, because there's some interesting different things that happen in it, and it is kind of one of them films where there's some weird stuff that happens in it, and they give you some answers as to what's going on, but it's very much kind of, you can come up a little bit with your own interpretation of certain things, and I like the way they handled that, because there's a fine line between just kind of throwing something out there and being like, okay, what do you think this is, as opposed to giving a certain amount of an explanation. So yeah, there's a lot going on in people lost into grass basically,
right?
And I thought that they pulled it off really, really well. So it's only like an hour and 40 minutes as well, so
okay, that's not too bad.
And
like you say, Stephen King, it's actually a novella that was by Stephen King and Joe Hill. Mm-hmm. And Joe Hill is the man behind the AMC series Nosferatu, and did the film Horns and a bunch of other stuff as well. Comic book series Lock and Key is Joe Hill's as well. So
okay.
Neither of them are particularly small authors. So, yeah. I mean, obviously Stephen King's Stephen King, but, Joe Hill's not a small author at this point either. So, it's weird. weird. Like, I wasn't overly aware of that movie, but then I don't do horror very much. So the Netflix system is working in that you're a horror person, so it's pushing horror stuff, always pushes sci-fi stuff at me and comic book things usually. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I get what you mean with that, but in terms of letting everyone know.
Yeah, no,
like,
I know.
That like, hey, we've got this, film based on a book by a really big guy.
Yeah.
I think they should try and do a better job with that. I mean, like I said, again, Breaking Bad, Emmy winning show, not a small thing, and they got a film out in like 5 days.
So, yeah. Although, to be fair, that has been pushed around quite a lot, I think.
A little bit more than In the Grass has, yeah.
Yeah.
In the Tall Grass, so.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff with that. Community, I actually finished season 4 yesterday. I remember last time I came on the podcast I was talking about just starting season 4. Interesting stuff with that, because I remember when I started and was like, hey, the season 4 premiere's got like a weird episode. I think the rest of season 4 is fine, and it was, I remember when I was like looking up different like opinions and stuff about the show, because I didn't know what anybody kind of thought, and everybody kind of pointed out like, oh, season 4 is this weird season, it's not as good and stuff like that. I didn't really have any problems necessarily with it, apart from that weird season 4 premiere episode, which I can look at as kind of an episode that stands out to be just really out of place. It was just really good the rest of season 4.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first season after they fired Dan Harmon, and who was brought back again later on. But it's interesting with you watching it without all the baggage of the drama that went on behind the scenes, which obviously all the fans knew about at the time. So it's interesting with you judging it almost from the outside, going to it now and not dealing with all that baggage and kind of, you know, following that. So it's interesting looking at it with a fresh pair of eyes, I guess. I think a lot of the criticism that season got was purely based on the fact that Dan Harmon wasn't there anymore.
Right. I get what you mean in terms of that. And like going into that season, I knew that like, okay, this might be different. Just prepare yourself that it might be worse. And then I watched the season 4 premiere and I was like, okay, is this what I'm kind of in for?
Yeah.
And then the rest of the season is just fine. Like it's still as good as it kind of was, in my opinion. So
okay.
And the last show I kind of wanted to talk about, which I've seen half of, is Good Omens. Finally went and watched that. I've watched the first 3 episodes. Things just keep getting in the way. I guess we're in that point of the year. So,
yes. I know the feeling.
I keep wanting to play Gears 5 because it's so good. But there you go. Yeah, watch the first 3 episodes. I've got 3 episodes left, of course, and it is, I think you've mentioned before, limited or a mini series. So
yeah,
only got 6 episodes. David Tennant's always good. He's probably one of the greatest actors of all time. And you know, he pairs himself obviously in the show with Michael Keane. It's interesting when I got to the third episode and I actually stopped trying to follow the plot so much with Good Omens. It stopped being the thing that mattered to me, and it was more just a case of, okay, because David Tennant and Michael Sheen play what's supposed to be opposite people, like basically an angel and a devil, and they're not supposed to work with each other, and you've got that going throughout the season, and David Tennant's trying to always push Michael Sheen's character to do something, and then he's not sure about it, and then you've kind of got that going on. I've been so much more focused on their two performances and what they're doing as opposed to the actual plot. So I mean, it's a fine way to watch it. Like, yeah, I'm still keeping track of what's happening, but not like the really intricate details of the plot, because I'm more, I guess, interested in, okay, what are these two going to do in the next scene, because they're just so good in the scenes that they do. So
I've seen it. It is a great show. I really enjoyed it. I was following the plot probably a bit more than maybe you were, but but yeah, I mean, it is very much, the standout performances are from those two guys more than anything else in that show. It is really, I could just stand to watch David Tennant and Michael Sheen do a double act on anything particularly. I really enjoy their work on this. It's really good, and it's such good material as well, because of course it's a Terry Pratchett novel with Neil Gaiman writing the series as well. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fabulous and really, really fun. And but yes, it is the performance by those two guys that really stands out above everything else in it, I think.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, you've got plenty of good stuff to watch with just those two alone in the show.
Yeah.
So good stuff with that. That's what I've been up to, apart from watching Man United fail.
So for me, there has been a couple of new shows. Raising Dion, which is a new comic book adaptation, which is on Netflix. Again, I don't know how well this has been promoted. It's one of those that may have slightly slipped under the radar. We have mentioned it a few times on the site. It's not a comic book I particularly know. It was by Dennis Liu, the comic book. Follows the story of a woman called Nicole, who is raising her son Dion after the death of her husband Mark, who's played by Michael B. Jordan. He's also an executive producer, but you don't, so if you're expecting this to be a Michael B. Jordan show, if you're a big fan of his, he's not in it all that much, so don't go into it expecting that, because he plays the husband who dies very, very early on. In fact, I think it starts with him dead, so you know, but you do see him in flashbacks and stuff. It's pretty much, you know, a single mother raising her young son, except when the young son starts to exhibit strange superhero-like abilities. It sort of becomes this story of how to raise a superhero. In fact, I think the first episode is called How Do You Raise a Superhero? Because the little kid is only like 7 years old. He's sort of 7, 8 years old. So it becomes this story of him manifesting his powers, learning to try to control them, but he's very young. You know, it's not like a little teen superhero. This is a sort of preteen kid that suddenly got these powers, and it's how he deals with that and how the mother has to deal with that as well. And of course, there is some other story running underneath about how he got the powers and all that sort of stuff, which I won't go into because it'll start to get spoilery. But what's quite lovely about it is it's got a really nice sense of humor to it. It's got a lot of drama in it, but there is a nice level of humor running to it. A lot of that comes from Jason Ritter, who plays the best friend Pat, who was Mark's best friend and his godfather to Dion, and is a sort of comic book nerd, and is a scientist that worked with Mark. It's quite nice because they're using a lot of comic book references when they're trying to figure out how to get him to control his powers. So, you know, there are references to kind of Superman and Batman and Green Lantern and things like that, you know. So they kind of using the trope stuff out of the actual comic books. So he's using his knowledge of that to try and help teach Dion to learn to control the powers. It's just really nicely put together. I'm really enjoying it. It's 9 episodes for the first season, I think.
I just looked at it. So 9 episodes.
It's up on Netflix right now. And if you like those sort of superhero dramas, it's one really, really worth watching. It's interesting. It's different. As I say, it's got some nice humor in it as well. One to go and check out. It's called Raising Dion. That, you can go and look that up on Netflix.
Cool. Sounds like something I'd really enjoy. I wish I knew about it before it came out.
Yeah, exactly. And over on Amazon, they released the DC Universe Swamp Thing series, which, as I think you probably know, got cancelled after the first episode of released on DC Universe. One of the reasons that it got cancelled, apparently, was the fact that the set was going to be unbelievably expensive to store when the production got shut down. And given how big that swamp set is, I can kind of see why, because it's really quite impressive. Unfortunately, it just means that they've just thrown a load of money away on it, but I really enjoyed the first couple of episodes of it. I mean, obviously, if you know the story of Swamp Thing, you know in the first couple of episodes you don't see an awful lot of Swamp Thing, because it is an origin story. It's about a guy called Alec Holland who is investigating these strange occurrences in a swamp, ends up getting turned into Swamp Thing. That's the sort of basic setup for it. And it's an origin story. So we see Alec Holland in the first episode, and then he sort of at some point turns into Swamp Thing. So you don't see much of the actual monster in those first few episodes. I'm only 2 episodes in at the moment. I'm sure we'll see more later. So it's a little bit maybe slow starting, but it's got good levels of horror to it, of that sort of comic book horror. I think this is another one you really like. It's very much up your sort of street, I think. Yeah. It's kind of creepy and odd, and I really enjoyed it, and I think it's really well done. It's such a shame they decided so quickly that they weren't going to bring it back. I mean, I know there were obviously financial issues with it, but real shame that they didn't keep it around, because the first season so far, I mean, as I say, I'm only 2 episodes in, but it is really interesting and different to a lot of other things, because it's got that sort of there's swearing in it. It is certainly not aimed at at small children. It's very violent in places. It's definitely a comic book horror, but worth going to watch, I think, even though it is only 9 episodes long and it will probably end on a cliffhanger as far as I'm aware. So, but yes, one worth going to watch. That's on Amazon Prime if you want to go and find that. Gaming wise, I've still been playing through the beta of Planet Zoo. The beta is about to come to an end. It's released in full on the 5th of November, so they've got a month to basically bug squash and try and get all the little glitches out of it. It's been fun. I've really, really enjoyed it. If you like games like Planet Coaster and those other sort of frontier-based building games, it's really worth going to play. The animations on the animals are really good. It's one of those things that you could spend hours building habitats and stuff in it. The detail that you can put on placing buildings down and setting up your sort of zoo is absolutely astonishing, in the same way that it has been in Planet Coaster. Some of the stuff which people have been uploading onto Steam, because they've got a Steam Workshop and you can upload your kind of builds of buildings and habitats and stuff on there. Some of the things people have been making are absolutely spectacular. I haven't gone that far into creating really complex builds because of the fact that it's a beta and everything is going to get wiped, and I don't know whether that includes the Steam Workshop stuff. So I kind of don't want to spend hours creating something which isn't going to be able to stay around when I can wait a month and then start building things properly. So I'm thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it. I've got about like 45 hours on it for the beta. So, you know, it's going to be one to look out for. But yeah, Planet Zoo comes out on the 5th of November. Something to do start of next month, definitely. And the MCU, I finally got to the end of my run. Well, nearly. I've still got Far From Home to watch yet, but I haven't got the DVD for that yet. I've been waiting for the home release yet. Comes out later this month, 20-something. It comes out on home release onto Sky, and then the disc release is a few weeks after that. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. That will obviously be the final one of that Infinity War run of the MCU. But I did watch Endgame, finished Endgame last night. I really love how they ended that. The moment when everybody shows up at the end is still so incredibly emotional. The final moments with Tony and all that sort of stuff. It's so well thought out, put together, really designed to kind of wrench at the heartstrings. That final film is such a great culmination of everything that has come before it. And I've really enjoyed going through that. And just the little things that you spot coming out, having watched them all together, there are lots of references that I'd missed the first time around in Endgame that are references back to earlier points in other films. So I just thoroughly enjoyed watching through all that again. I now need to find something else to go and watch my way through. Star Wars, possibly. Maybe I'll go and do Star Wars, do a run through of that, seeing as we're going to have the final Skywalker saga movie out later this year.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So maybe if you watch it all leading up to, what's the next one called?
Rise of Skywalker. So yeah, I might go and do a run through that. I might do it chronologically. Maybe you go through and do a chronology.
And it's actually less films than the MCU. So
yes, that is true. Yes, there is a lot less films than the MCU. So yes, that would be. I mean, I could go through it and add in things like Rebels and Clone Wars, but that might take a very, very long time.
I myself need to do that at some point to like give it, because that's all connected to it as well, isn't it?
The Clone Wars, certainly. Rebels less so, although there are bits in Rebels which are going to be connected. Well, I mean, it is still canon, so there are bits in there that are connected. It's slightly, those characters haven't shown up in live action, although some of the live action characters have shown up in Rebels. The characters from Rebels and a lot of the original characters from Clone Wars haven't shown up in live action yet. I suspect they may do at some point, but they haven't yet.
So. Right. You've got Disney Plus and all that you can work with as well.
We've got the Obi-Wan series coming.
Mandalorian, Obi-Wan, and all that sort of stuff.
You've got all that coming. So,
I mean, at some point I need to give a proper watch of all of that stuff and sort of get all that in there.
Yeah, I might go through and do it sort of chronologically, do the prequels and then do Rogue One and do it all that way. Yeah, maybe do that. Mm-hmm. So
that's Fallen Order games out next month.
I have that on pre-order as well. I try not to pre-order things, but it's a Star Wars RPG. Right. Of course, I'm going to pre-order it. It's not like I'm not going trying to buy it, is it? So so I have that ready to go. I am looking forward to playing that. The footage looks great. We'll see how it plays, because EA.
Don't get me started on FIFA 20.
So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We start off the TV and film news with renewals, cancellations and pickups. We have our first renewal, which is Dear White People, which has been renewed for a fourth and final season. It's hit the fourth season level of Netflix, which seems to be three or four seasons seems to be when Netflix start cancelling things. So, but at least it's got the fourth season and it's going to be a final season. They can wrap it up how they want to wrap it up. That's all good, you know, so that's happening. The Walking Dead has been renewed for an 11th season. Not unsurprisingly, I mean, AMC are going to milk that cow for as much as they possibly can. They have announced that Lauren Cohen is coming back as Maggie, though.
Which was a
nice surprise, because they had sort of been in talks for a very, very long time. There were rumors she was going to come back a while back, and we didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but she's now back in the fold. They're saying towards the end of the season 10, aren't they? I think so.
They usually finish filming around November, December ish so maybe she's filming now or something.
So
obviously they've been filming the episodes already. I mean, it starts later today, so, or yesterday for you that are listening.
So it is restarting up again. It is split into two halves as well, so I mean, there is she may have been filming stuff already. There may be, you know, it maybe she only kind of drops in at the end and then becomes a series regular for season 11. We don't know, so we'll have to see. But I'm glad to have Lauren Cohen back. I think, you know, it's nice to have a face return, because there's so many people leaving that show. So that's nice,
especially with season 9. So I mean we knew it was a possibility that she could have come back, and the conversation was always, okay, what's going to happen with Whiskey Cavalier, if there was going to be a season 2 or not. Obviously that would have taken her away for another year. That didn't happen, and then we knew it was kind of a possibility as to, okay, is she going to like go and work on another show, we'll do some films or whatever. But no, it's nice to have a character, like you said, returning as opposed to leaving. We'll see what happens with that, but yeah, good stuff.
They've also announced and shown a trailer for the third, I wish they'd name this, but the third teen-led spin-off series from The Walking Dead, which is this this new teen series that they've got coming. It looks kind of interesting, the trailer for this, because it seems very different, because it is following a group of teens. That's the first thing. So that does give it a slightly different kind of twist to some of the other shows. The other thing is, it is based in a huge community. I mean, they say in the trailer there's like over 9,000 people in this community, and the community itself seems to be very much kind of almost back to kind of pre-apocalypse point. You know, there are schools, and they seems to have managed to fend off people, and you know, it's quite a large community, it looks like, these people come from. It follows a group of young adults who they've only really known a world with what they refer to as empties, which is their word for walkers. They've grown up in relative safety and comfort behind the walls of this big community. For some reason, they head out into the surrounding environment. It seems to have something to do with one of the kids' fathers going missing, so they had a head out and are starting to experience the sort of wider world. That's basically the setup for it. It looks kind of interesting. It's intriguing. We're going to have to wait for a little bit until we see more, because it's not being released until spring 2020. It has been picked up by Amazon Prime in the UK. So
it's good that it's got it home already.
So obviously AMC in the US Amazon Prime in the UK. One little thing that did come out is when Rick got choppered off at the end of the, or rather the fifth episode of whatever it is of the last season of The Walking Dead, the helicopter that took him off had three circles on the side. And Gimbel, who was at New York Comic Con this weekend, came up and said that those three circles represent three different civilizations, which are bound and intertwined in some way, although they're also very, very different. And the place that these kids come from is one of those circles. So it sort of ties into the whole Rick thing by the sounds of it, which is kind of interesting.
Here's the thing with this, is that they did the same thing in this fifth season of Fear the Walking Dead. They had a character from that community show. I won't say what happens to that character. Obviously, that would be more spoilery. But what one of the characters from this helicopter group, which of course I kind of could know the name of because of comic book stuff, but obviously I won't say what the name of that community could be here. It might be a different name. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like they might rename it on the show or something. They had the character from that group come in and everyone was like, oh, is Rick going to appear on Fear the Walking Dead? And I kind of was like, do you think Rick's going to appear
on Fear the Walking Dead? No, he's not. And they
treated it as this teaser of like, oh, look, this character's come in and they're with the group with Rick and then maybe they might fly someone from Fear off to see them and then they might meet up with... I think they've just been teasing it, basically. Yeah. As like, oh, look, there's this Rick connection in Fear the Walking Dead. And I think it's going to end up being the same type of thing in this third show. So,
yeah.
Because he won't show up in this show either, will he?
No, he's doing
his films. So
what they've basically said is there are some connections, there are some minor crossovers, but they are very separate entities right now. You know, the Rick movies will be very separate entities to the other things. There are connections. They are expanding this into a wider world, but don't expect Rick to suddenly pop up in this. Although they are one of the communities, you know, there are three, as he said, very different communities. There are connections between those, but they're not definitely going to overlap in any major way at this point. So, but it does allow them to maybe cross people over at some point in the future.
Which they've done a bit more in Fear. They've got Dwight and Morgan over there.
Yeah, so you know, that is happening. Thankfully, it's gone to Amazon Prime in the UK, this spin-off. It's not on AMC, because AMC is now even less available than it was previously, because it has dropped off Sky. The exact reasoning for that isn't entirely clear. It's something to do with the fact that BT, who provided AMC as part of their sports package, are now going to be selling the BT sports package directly, rather than you having to go through BT, because you used to have to go through BT to order it, I think. And I think Sky is selling it directly. But as part of that, it means AMC has disappeared off the Sky network, which is kind of frustrating given that you've got things like the second season of The Terror starting and now people on Sky can't watch it. So, I'm very glad that I never ordered BT Sport just to get AMC, because I would be extremely annoyed at this point. That kind of sucks. It's now completely BT exclusive, so the only way you can watch it is if you've got BT TV directly, which seems like an utterly stupid way of doing it, but
it's kind of weird that the three shows are all on three different places, because the main show is on Fox, the Fear is on AMC UK, and this one's going to be on Amazon.
Thankfully Fear and you can actually get them all off Amazon. You can certainly buy them all off Amazon, because I think they go up something like next day for you to buy them, and then they come onto Amazon Prime. It goes onto Amazon Prime later, but you can actually buy, I think, the individual episodes like next day after they are on AMC, and a season pass and stuff. But they do eventually come onto Amazon Prime as well. It takes about a year for it to get from the premiere on AMC onto Amazon Prime. That's kind of good news if you're a Walking Dead fan anyway. Of course, we will be talking more Walking Dead, because Walking Dead is now back. On Wednesdays, we will be doing the Walking Dead UK podcast, which will be over on Entertainment Talk. So you can hear me and Matt talk much more about Walking Dead over there.
And hear me try and explain comic book stuff without potentially, but maybe not spoiling things.
Yes. There was a bunch of trailers as well, which went up on the website. We have trailers for Lost in Space Season 2, which bizarrely is dropping on Christmas Eve. I mean, Boxing Day, I'd understand, because who does anything on Boxing Day, really? But But Christmas Eve seems like a weird time to drop it. But, you know, great. It gives you something to watch if you're bored over the Christmas period. Mm-hmm. The Expanse Season 4, that had a new trailer go up as well. We've had a couple of trailers for that already, but that had a slightly more cohesive trailer. That's gone up. Friday the 13th of December, that's coming. Marvel's Runaway Season 3, that had a trailer going up. It comes onto Hulu in the US fairly soon. It's probably going to be January 2020 on Sci-Fi in the UK. Outlander Season 5 got its first trailer. That is up on the website 17th of February on Amazon. That is going to arrive, we think. There are some preliminary dates for The Flash and Supergirl. These aren't set in stone yet, so they may move, but on Sky One, it looks like Supergirl's coming on the 21st of October, The Flash on the 22nd. Arrow will be a few weeks after that because it's a shorter run, so it's not coming straight away. The big issue at the moment is Sky have no plans to air Batwoman, which is a pretty major issue given that there is a crossover coming up that has Batwoman in it as one of the episodes. Unless they've managed to sort out some deal which gives them just that crossover episode, in which case that'll be fine. We don't need to necessarily see the whole season, but we do need that crossover episode. Otherwise, one fifth of the story is missing. So, yeah. I have asked Guy about this. I have pointed out that what a major event this is, and they're going to get an awful lot of complaints if that episode is missing. It's an interesting situation. I don't know why they haven't picked it up. When I posted the Flash trailer, somebody did post a comment on the website saying that they had tweeted at Sky asking what was happening with Batwoman. And the response got was, yes, you're not the only one disappointed by this, but we cannot show a program without having the broadcast rights, and we cannot obtain the broadcast rights without a US production company offering them, and they're not offering the rights right now. Now, bear in mind that is third hand. I have no idea whether they were telling the truth. I don't know whether that is correct. It's odd if that is the case, because the only reason I could think of for not offering the broadcast rights would be if they'd already sold them to somebody else, which could mean that it ends up on somewhere like Netflix or Amazon. But, you know, that would be weird, because there's only two reasons they'd do it. One is if it's already been sold somewhere else. Two, if for some reason the Warner Media, who are the people that are in charge of selling this stuff, are feeling somewhat malicious towards Sky and don't want them to have it. But I can't see a reason for that, given that they have fairly close relationship between Sky and Warner, given that, you know, they have a deal over all the HBO stuff, which is also part of Warner Media. It would seem odd if that is the case. So I don't know whether that is correct. I can't stress that strongly enough. It is third hand. But yes, that would be odd if that is the case and they're not offering the rights at all, unless they've got somewhere else for it.
Do you know what I can see happening is, do you remember when Designated Survivor was on ABC? I know it moved to Netflix eventually, but it was always Netflix UK. Remember when it was on ABC and then I think it was the next day, I remember you just randomly posted like, hey, it's just popped up on Netflix. I remember you saying to me, and I think it was Sophie or someone, like they hadn't released any prior information to that. It just kind of popped up. I wonder if like next week Batwoman just pops up on Netflix, but nothing gets released prior. It's just
quite
on
possibly
there suddenly.
I mean, yeah. You don't know.
Because that's a very Netflix thing to happen as well, is, you know, you just go on there and it's like, here it is. It's just on there. So
yeah, I mean, it's not impossible. They've done it with a few
weird, but that's
before.
A possibility.
Okay, that would suck for people that haven't got Netflix subscriptions and are following the Arrowverse, but, you know, at least it
would
be somewhere.
Home,
yeah, so. At least it would be somewhere. And it would suck for Sky, because the amount of complaints they're going to get still if that crossover episode isn't there, particularly if they weren't even given the chance to buy it in the first place, if that is true. So I don't know. I honestly don't know what is going on with it directly. As I say, that was third hand that apparently came off somebody on from Sky on the Twitter feed. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the ideal solution would be that they get the one episode that they because that crisis series
is quite important to do that.
That crisis thing is essentially its own miniseries, and it would seem weird if they're not being allowed to show that one episode as part of that run. Who knows? But yes, at the moment, Batwoman as an entire series is certainly doesn't appear to be airing on Sky. That is what we're being told. They have no plans to pick it up.
In general, just keep your eye on Netflix because you never know.
Never know. I mean, that would seem like the other obvious place for it. But
because Black Lightning's actually on there, isn't it?
So, yeah. Black Lightning is on there. And Black Lightning does appear in the crossover, but their episodes are not involved in the crossover. Right. The character
just in
Black
one
Lightning.
Of the episodes.
Yeah, so. It appears. Sticking with the Arrowverse, they have got somebody new coming in for, or another new face coming in for the crossover. They've announced Ostrich Chow, who you might know from Supernatural, the other show which he's struggling to with a UK home right now at the moment. You might know him. He played Kevin Tran in that series, the Prophet. He is apparently joining the Crisis event as Ryan Choi. And for those of you that don't know your DC history, Ryan Choi is one of the two Atoms who are currently in the DC comic continuity. Ray Palmer obviously is one, and we already have Ray Palmer on the show, although not for much longer, because we do know that Brandon Routh is leaving. So I think it's kind of interesting that they've introduced Ryan Choi into this, because it does give them a potential direct swap out from one Atom to another if they decide to keep him around. And we don't know whether they will. We don't know if he's just going to be in the crossover episodes or whether he's going to be there for longer. Ryan Choi in the comic book continuity, he's a sort of protege of Ray Palmer. He's been corresponding via letters, and then the letters seem to stop and Palmer vanishes. So Choi, who is based in Hong Kong, moves to the United States and ends up taking up Palmer's position at Ivy University. Whilst he's there, he discovers the Atom suit and ends up wearing it, takes over the mantle, and then goes off to discover that in actual fact the missing Ray Palmer has been shrunk down into the microverse, which is why nobody can find him. So that's what sort of happens in the comic books. They're sort of sticking to that plot line, it seems. He's a physics professor at Ivy University in the TV show as well. Starts out as just a normal guy, but then learns he has a pivotal role to play in the upcoming crisis. So we're getting another Atom.
Three Supermen, two Atoms, kind of a Batman, or Bruce Wayne. Yes. I guess we'll be in there. I mean, with all this cast we've had, which has all been good news so far, I mean, I'm not connected really to Smallville in any real way, because I've not seen any of it. So I understand like a lot of people have the nostalgia, and all the Smallville announcements have made a lot of people happy, which is really good. It's a good thing we do have five episodes for this, because there's a lot of characters coming, plus all the characters we already have from all the shows are already there. There's going to be a lot of characters involved. So good that we got five episodes to give everybody some time, and we'll see how, like you said, see how everything plays out. But so do you think he will replace Ray in the show?
It's certainly a possibility. We'll see how well he goes down in the crisis event, but it would seem possible that, I mean, there are two Atoms out there. We'll have to see how Ray Palmer leaves the show, whether he goes off with Nora Dark, which seems to be what somewhere he's happening in some way, or whether he's still around or, you know, so we'll have to see what happens with that. But I really like him as an actor. I think he would be a good addition. I mean, not that Legends really used the Atom suit very much, in all honesty. Certainly last season. I mean, they very, very rare they actually suit up. So I would like to see a bit more of that. Well, I mean, much as I love Legends, I would like to see them using those powers a little bit more. So we'll see. But
I think what would make sense, if the next season of Legends, which obviously the premiere will be the one of the crossover episodes, I wonder if they're going to kind of put, obviously, this new Atom character, put him in there, and then maybe in like the season finale of next season of Legends, they could have like a handing off the torch kind of thing to this new guy.
You either do it in the season finale, or they do it in the opening of the following season.
They decide
they need an Atom for something, and you know, somebody to shrink down for something, and they go and get him. So I mean, I would quite like to see him around a bit more. You know, he was great on Supernatural. He was in Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency as well, and the Amazon Prime series Demon X. So I would like to see him a bit more. You know, that will be good. Moving on to Amazon, actually, they've announced some casting for This Sounds Like a Show for You, a supernatural horror event series called Them Covenant. It's written by Little Marvin. It's set in 1953, centers on Henry and Lucky Emery, played by the previously announced Deborah Arindi, who was in Luke Cage and True Detective, and Ashley Thomas, who was in Top Boy and 24 Legacy. The couple, along with their children, decide to move from North Carolina to an all-white LA neighborhood. Whilst their family's home is on a tree-lined, seemingly idyllic street, it soon becomes ground zero for where malevolent forces, both real and supernatural, threaten to taunt, ravage, and destroy them. So they've announced some new casting for this. Alison Pill, who is about to star in the Star Trek Picard series, which had a new trailer as well this weekend. You can see that on the site. She was in The Newsroom. That's the other show she's in. Plays one of the aforementioned white neighbors whose life is interrupted by the arrival of this new family. Ryan Quanti, who was in True Blood, he played Jason Stackhouse. He plays a Korean War vet who is the neighborhood milkman and local dreamboat. So yes, that's very much his sort of role, I think. And Percy Haynes-White plays Davis, described as a blossoming hepcat who has been treated as an outsider for most of his life. He played Andy Strucker in The Gifted. And Javier Botet, who has been cast as in a series regular role, but the character has not yet been announced. He's a Spanish actor. He's been in It Chapter 2, Slender Man, which plays the title role. He was in Star Trek Discovery. Everything he's played at this point has basically been creature role, so I think he's probably playing whatever the malevolent forces are in this, I rather suspect, although they haven't said. Derek Phillips has also been cast in a recurring role as the East Compton Police Department sergeant. He previously appeared in Shooter and Longmire, and also popped up as Agent O'Brien in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I honestly couldn't tell you who that was. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're saying this is an event series. So the fact that this is called Them Covenant, I suspect they are planning them something else coming up as well.
Yeah, a little bit like what American Horror Story
kind of does. I think this is their attempt to do a sort of American Horror Story kind of thing. So I suspect they maybe have got a couple of these planned that are going to be set in different time periods. But I mean, it's really good cast by the looks of things. I like the idea that they're sort of mixing this horror story with a kind of race story, which is quite cool. I think that's quite good as well. And I like the cast. I like Alison Pill. Ryan's great. I don't know some of the other guys, but nice to see them in. Percy Edge White was good as Andy Strucker. So
yeah, I mean, in terms of me for horror stuff, like we've kind of said earlier in the podcast, I'm a bit more into horror stuff than what you are. I'm more into kind of like slasher horror stuff, like Scream or Chucky or Halloween or those sorts of things. I do tend to find, and this has been a bit more of an American Horror Story thing, because Ryan Murphy can't always tell a story that makes 100% sense. when they've done some of their previous seasons that have been supernatural, like last season, which was called Apocalypse, when you do like witches and all this other sort of stuff, it's very difficult sometimes to make that grounded enough to where it makes sense. I know like supernatural stuff isn't always really grounded, but I mean, this is I guess an entirely different thing, so... It's going to be a little bit different to that, but I mean, I'll give it a try. Like, if it's still got good horror stuff in there, I can still watch certain supernatural horror stuff. But it's when you get to a point where, like, if someone dies and then gets revived or something like that, and then that kind of takes away, when you start doing things that are like that, or like when a character dies and they're brought back, or and there's something like they're a different person or something, because then you kind of take away the stakes of like, okay, if something in a horror series is going around killing things or people, and those can kind of come back in some kind of way or whatever, it just takes away a bit. Sometimes supernatural horror stuff just doesn't work quite so well as just, you know,
straight slasher stuff. Yeah,
right. Even in this current American Horror Story season, they're playing around with that a little bit, but not too much, but it's still where it's kind of normal enough. So yeah, we'll see how this works out. But
yeah, no, I mean, as I say, I don't do horror that much, but pretty interesting sounding one. And so, you know, certainly if you like horror things, that'd be one to look out for. I don't think there's a date for that yet. Probably be next year sometime, so keep an eye out for that. But that's called Them Covenant. That is cool. Over on HBO, they have ordered a comic book adaptation. It's based on the comic books DMZ. This sounds somewhat timely and quite appropriate, really. And they've only ordered a pilot at the moment, so it may not go to series. The comic book and the series are set in a near future where America is in the midst of a new civil war. The action takes place in New York City, more specifically the island of Manhattan, which has been turned into a demilitarized zone, aka the DMZ. As war rages between the remains of the federal government and the Free State armies, a female medic on the island is trying day in and day out to help keep residents alive while trying to find her lost son. In the process, she tries to provide a source of hope for an America who has lost all sense of idea as she faces gangs, milita, and warlords that control the lawless no man's land. That's the sort of basic setup for it. You can see why they decided this might be a good thing, given, you know, the civil unrest that there, or the divide that there is between people, particularly, I mean, in the UK as well, but particularly in America. You can see why that they maybe thought this would be an interesting one to adapt right now. Acclaimed director Ava DuVernay, who is no stranger to comic books, is because she is signed on to direct a big screen adaptation of DC's New Gods, is set to be behind the camera for the show. She also worked on the movie Selma and When They See Us, the Netflix series, which I know was Emmy nominated as well. Story is being adapted by Robert Pattino, who worked on Sons of Anarchy and Westworld, from the original comic book by Brian Wood. This sort of sounds interesting. The pilot's expected to film next year. Don't know whether it's going to move forward after that, but we'll have to see. It certainly seems like an interesting one, and I know the comic book's quite popular. It's not one that I've read, though.
No, me neither. I'm not quite sure about it, but I trust HBO because they've done just endless amounts of good television. And usually when someone tells me, you should watch this show, and I'll say, where is it? What's it on? And someone says HBO, that kind of immediately says like, okay, there's something a bit more there usually with at least with most of their things. I mean, True Detective season 2, whatever, but with most things that they've done have been very, very good. So that always adds a kind of certain level of, okay, this is probably going to be good just because of, I guess, their history of what they've done and stuff like that. So it's got that there, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it turns out. It's very early yet. So
yeah.
I don't know.
It does sound like an interesting one, though. Mm. I'm quite intrigued to see how they pull this off. Interesting people behind it. We'll have to wait and see. But one to look out for. We'll let you know if that moves past being a pilot when they shoot it next year. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Next, we have an interview. The interview this week is with our old friend Nathan Barr, who has recently been the composer on the new Amazon series Carnival Row, which you can go and watch on Amazon right now. I really, really enjoyed that series. It's that sort of Victorian steampunk fantasy drama thing. It's been really, really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's coming back for another season as well, so I'm very much looking forward to seeing that. This is the fourth time we've interviewed Nate. He's a thoroughly, thoroughly lovely guy. He's worked on shows like The Americans, Sneaky Pete, True Blood, host of other series. You always know the music's going to be great when you hear that Nate Barr's involved, because he's absolutely fantastic. We first interviewed Nate back in 2013. He just rescued this Theater Wurlitzer organ from the lot at Fox. And this is one of those old kind of organs that they used to have for providing music for various movies and stuff. So it's got this huge long history, and it had fallen into disrepair. Nate rescued it and built an entire studio around this organ, because you may think you know what a Wurlitzer is, but as he explains in the interview, it's way, way more complex than what you're probably picturing as an organ. So he goes into a bit of detail about sort of that, and also he's had it sort of up and running for about a year now. So he talks about the projects he's used it on, and the fact that he's been lending it out to other, some very high profile composers as well, who have also come in and used it. So we talk a little bit about that. We also chat about he's well known for collecting various strange instruments, so we chat about the various things that he's picked up over the last 12 months on top of using the organ as well. So here's the interview with Nate Barr. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. lovely to have you back on again. I think last time we spoke, you'd literally just finished the studio.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So lots happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and we spoke a little bit about Carnival Row then, because you just started playing with things, I think, but you hadn't got the organ up and running and that. So you were having it tuned like that afternoon or something.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been a really exciting first year in the studio. A lot of good stuff's happened.
There's quite a lot of stuff to talk about, and the main thing being Carnival Row, I guess, more than anything else, which I actually finished it last night because I've fallen a bit behind and went through and watched the rest of it last night. It's such a good series.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. Good.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's a wonderful series. I'm very interested to see where they take it for a second season, because it is all
it really does seem to have found an audience, which is great.
Yeah, it's just a really interesting, different kind of show. As I said, when we last spoke, you just started to work on it, but hadn't really figured anything specific out, I don't think. How did you get to the sound that you got to for that?
Well, obviously, the Wurlitzer was a very enticing piece of possible, you know, musical.
Yes.
A big part of it. And Travis Beecham, the creator, and Renee Acavera were both very interested in that as well. And so that main title piece is all organ, fiddle, and choir.
Yeah.
And so obviously the nature of the show and the row and all that stuff sort of lends itself to a carnival-esque kind of sound, but it also allowed me to really stretch out and try to use the organ in very atraditional ways. And that's been really incredible as well. And so, yeah, I mean, otherwise, you know, let's see, cello and then some other weird instruments. But it was nice because the creators, there's a scene in the first episode where Philo's chasing Jack across the rooftop.
Yeah.
Before. And that's, you know, that cue, in my best of my knowledge, it's probably the first action cue ever on a theater organ. You know? So I just took what would have been maybe brass and string parts and did them on the organ instead. And it has a really trashy, unique sound to it that they loved and I loved too. Because I wouldn't have gone there. I would have thought it was over the top with the organ too much, but they loved it. So it was great.
Yeah, yeah. That opening title theme, which again I think is brilliant. You know, I love your stuff, and I think it's such a wonderful, wonderful thing, that opening title sequence. Although I think it should have a disclaimer on it that said no string players were harmed in the making of it, because that string line is just intense.
That's my assistant Harry. He is a went to the same college I went to. He's been working for me a little over a year, and he's just absolutely, as you can hear, a brilliant fiddle player. So not surprisingly, there's a lot of solo violin in everything I'm doing over the past year. He's just great. So yeah, it's good.
Yes. Well, yes, definitely round of applause to him, because that's a phenomenal bit of work on that.
Yes.
We should talk a little bit about the organ. Now you've kind of got it built and up and running. Because I think when you talk about Wurlitzers and organs, people, I guess when you mention organ, the thing that comes to mind is a sort of church organ, but the Wurlitzer is a totally different beast, but you know, particularly the theatre organ that you have. Do you just want to explain sort of what it is and the components of it and that sort of thing? Because it's got lots of different bits to it.
It does. So there are a couple of things that really differentiate a theatre organ from a church organ. Everyone knows what a church organ sounds like, and some people know what a theatre organ sounds like. But for people who don't know, you know, if you can picture sitting in a silent film and what the music would sound like, that it would accompany that, that gives people somewhat of an idea. But the big thing that differentiates it from a church organ is there's a room, which I've put it in the center of the studio, which is full of actual percussion instruments that were built with the organ. So the Wurlitzer built all of this. And when you ordered an organ back in the early 20th century, you could have it come with a real marimba, a real xylophone, a real glockenspiel, a real celeste, real cymbals, real drums. These are the actual instruments mechanically played with mallets, which are activated through the use of magnets, air, and electricity. And so if you're sitting at the organ keyboard, and you put down one of those colored stops, it'll literally say marimba. And you push that down and you go to your keys and you start playing. And whatever you play, it sends an electrical signal up to mallets on a real giant marimba. And the marimba then plays the parts that you're playing. So it's a really special instrument in that sense. And one of the instruments in that room that I was really tickled to be able to use are the tuned sleigh bells. It actually has a series of several octaves of sleigh bells. Each one's on a small leather strap, and that strap is attached to a pneumatic that when the key's depressed, it shakes up and down. And so if you listen to the very last phrases of the main title, you'll hear a belly sounding shaking bell that plays the melody. Da, 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 da. And that's, those are the sleigh bells. So it occupies six rooms, the organ. Most people walk in and they see the keyboards and they go, oh, yeah, organ. And they don't know that actually that's just the remote control for the instrument. Yeah. The organ is actually in six rooms behind the walls. And so it's 1,366 pipes. The smallest pipe is, you know, about half the size of a normal pencil.
Yeah.
And about that, even thinner than that. And the largest pipe, you know, I could wriggle into, you know, it's huge. So it's an amazing instrument. And in the first year of its life, I'm happy to say it's been used, this specific instrument has been used by Danny Elfman, the Dana brothers, Michael Giacchino, Teddy Shapiro. So I've been really keen to get it right back into film and television where it belongs, because as you know, this was built for Fox Studios. It was used by Bernard Herrmann, John Williams, Alex North, Dimitri Tiomkin, Jerry Goldsmith, anyone who was anyone back in the days used it. And so the fact that I've had a couple of really prime opportunities to put it into big projects, and also some of these other composers like Danny have come in and said, oh, I got to use this thing. It's been really exciting.
It's really amazing. I'm so happy it's working so well, because, I mean, this has been something that's been going on since we very, very first spoke to you years ago. And I'm just so happy that it's working so well for you. It's an amazing, amazing thing. I love the fact that it's got the real instruments in there as well, because it's so easy to do this stuff digitally now, but it doesn't have that sort of soul to it, you know?
That's right. And honestly, it's particularly with the bass end, the low end of the organ, when you're playing the pedals, I could sample that. But honestly, there's something that happens when you've got nine mics in the room capturing all that air and frequency coming into the stage. There's something that happens in that to me is not something you can capture in a sample. And when it goes to the stage, several of the dubbing mixers, whether it's on the movies I've done or the others, they all comment on, my God, that organ, what it does to these speakers in theater is something they've never experienced before. You know, it's pretty cool.
That's amazing. It's also great that you got to use it on something like Carnival Row, which has this sort of steampunk aesthetic to it. And you have this thing which just fits so well into it.
It is. It's like that whole, if you build it, they will come. Like, I didn't know when I was putting this in, when I would have, I thought, oh, maybe in the first couple of years, I'll use it once.
Yeah.
But, you know, literally maybe 6 months before the studio was done, I got House of the Clock in its walls, which is a collaboration with Eli Roth. And that also was a perfect world, though completely different, to explore the organ. And so the organ is all over that movie. It's all over Carnival Row. And it's, you know, honestly, I just did a show on FX called Fosse Verdon.
Yes.
So that actually, there are moments in that score, even no one would know it's the organ, where the bass pedal, the bass sort of note is the organ. So I'm getting it in everywhere.
That is what you said you would try and do when you were building.
And the nice thing is it does disappear into textures and not announce itself as an organ. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have really known that it was the organ in that opening theme had I not read that it was the organ in the opening theme.
So I'm
so happy it's working so well. It's really brilliant.
Me too.
You also used a choir for that as well, which again is something that, given in a lot of cases, they're not singing tune, they're singing just note. You could have used that digitally as well, I guess, but you used a real choir for that.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously there's a long history in film and TV fantasy of using a choir, and it makes sense because choir, just as choir has been around in church from the beginning of time to speak to sort of those larger themes about life and death and all this, that worked really well in this show with the scope of it. Like episode 3, they go to Tirnanoc and you get a bit of the past and everything. And all that felt like it really wanted to have a choir behind it. So we got it was only nine women. It was a 9-woman choir. And that's a beautiful, there's an intimacy to that size ensemble instead of 40 that really lent itself well to the show. And so on the soundtrack, which is coming out soon, I'm happy to say, the last 2 pieces on it are a cappella arrangements of the themes in Carnival Row just for 9 voices. And it's really beautiful. So I'm quite proud of that. And that was also the first time I recorded choir in my studio, and it just sounded spectacular. That's another exciting component of, in the process of building this building for this organ and having a room that the organ sounds beautiful in, I've gotten a room that is spectacular for orchestra, choir, everything. It just sounds wonderful. And that's been so exciting to experience this year. Like this year we've had solo instruments, we've had choir, we've had a 20-piece orchestra, we're having a 24-piece orchestra tomorrow, we've had a 50-piece orchestra. So we're really getting a sense for just how special, thankfully, the room turned out, because it's, as you can imagine, when you're building a room that you want it to look beautiful and sound beautiful, it's a total crapshoot on some level. You know, even the acoustician said, and he's brilliant. He said, I think this is going to work, but until you finish it and put mics in there and musicians, you don't know. So,
yeah, it's great that you're getting the use out of it. And it's not just the place to house the organ,
So. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's it.
With the music for Carnival Row, you've created a number of character themes for various people. How did you come to create specific themes for certain different characters? How did you pick what you were using for those?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. Philo's theme came about as score for a scene that isn't even in the show anymore.
Right.
They just cut it out. It was a fight scene between him and this fey guy in this sort of dingy club. So I came up with that theme for him there, and then it thankfully, works over him in many different situations. And the theme you hear in the main title is the Row theme, followed by that weird sleigh bell version of Philo's theme at the end. And then in terms of, obviously there's a big love story here, so you want a big love theme. And so that, again, that's very fiddle based. And so for Philo and Vignette, there's that sort of sweeping love theme that you hear kind of best when they're out in the rain at the end of 3, after you come back from Tirnanoc and they're standing in the rain outside.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful version of the theme there. And then one of my favorite themes is the theme I wrote for Agraeus and Imogen, the puck and the wealthy socialite
girl. Yes. Yeah.
There's a theme in there with viola and Philo, which is really, I'm really proud of. And we've got that. And then we've got an Imogen theme, which is on harp, which is her sort of flighty, light theme. And then we've got a theme for Jacob and, I'm blanking on her name right now, the daughter, the politically motivated daughter.
Yes.
Who's so wonderful as an actress. So that has a theme as well. So, it's just wanted to be a thematic show. The producers wanted it to have some sort of electronic elements, too, to speak to the steampunk part of it. But I'm grateful that, there are other shows like this which were not really thematic. The score was not allowed to shine, or for whatever reason didn't shine, and it's nice to be on a show where they were very welcoming about the idea of specific melodies for specific characters, so in that classic storytelling style.
There are a number of songs in the show as well. Were you involved in doing those, or were
I wasn't. So Liza Richardson, who's our music supervisor, is just brilliant. She had a hand in that. And Patty Gurdy, she's a hurdy-gurdy player and singer. We're over in Europe. I'm not sure where, but she, when I came to the show, those had already been floating around. cutting room. And they're really wonderful. They really lend themselves beautifully.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I just wonder because they sit so well with your music in there as well. Oh. You know, there is a, they work so well together. So I just wondered whether there was a connection, but no, that's interesting.
Yeah.
As we've established with the organ, you like to collect odd instruments, as we know, and as the master of strange instruments, which you should totally have on a business card. What's the latest addition? What's the newest thing you got?
So I've worked for 5 years developing an instrument with my friend Mark, who's a really brilliant organist. We took an old pump organ and we gutted it and we put in a special wind chest and two wind machines, which are buried in the back, and the wind line goes under the floor. So this was pre-planned into the studio. And then I have hundreds and hundreds of just strange organ pipes I've collected that you can literally put into the wind holes and then you can experiment with the pipes. And so that's one of the instruments. And then basically there are seven stops, and I put in extras not knowing what they would be, but I'm slowly finding other odd things to plug into it. And so there's something called a Robert Morton Violian. Robert Morton was one of the great, sort of the second great organ, theater organ builder. His studio was actually just a couple miles from here back in the 20s. It's gone now, but it's an instrument with maybe 60 strings, small strings, and there's a pneumatic that pushes the string into a large wheel that turns like a bow. It's rosin. And so you play your keys and it's pressing the strings into this bow. And it's a really ingenious instrument that someone described as sounding like a feral cat being skinned alive. So it never took off, but I'm going to find lots of use for it. And it's extremely rare. This will probably be the only one in the world that's been restored like this. And maybe of any of them, there may be four or five others in the world that I've heard of, if even that.
Wow.
It's a special forgotten piece of, that's the brilliant thing about theater organs is there were so many people trying to figure out what they could add to the experience of playing and listening to a theater organ. And it didn't have to be a pipe. So this guy came up with this idea, and the advertisement said, Robert Morton Violian, add the sound of a symphony string orchestra to your organ. And it sounds horrible. I don't know how to... he would have played it for them with a straight face, but
that's brilliant. Yeah. Oh well, I'm glad you're still finding more wonderful things to add to it.
And another thing that I used in this one, which you can actually hear in a couple places, is the Kanglang, which is the human femur bone trumpet that I have.
Yeah,
so actually that gets used. One of my assistants, Kyle, did a really wonderful job of processing it a bit after we did some sampling. And so that gets used quite a bit, too, throughout the show. So it's been fun to finally find a real place for that.
Yes. Yeah. I think we spoke about that the first time we ever talked. So.
Yeah.
So great. I'm glad that's in there. So Carnival Row coming back for another season. A lot of the other shows you're working on are kind of things were coming to an end because Sneaky Pete's not coming back. Americans have finished. Fosse Verdon was kind of a one-off thing. The Sun coming to an end. So what are you doing next?
I'm working on a really beautiful film right now at Miramax called Uncle Frank. It's written and directed by Alan Ball, who's the creator of True Blood, wrote American Beauty. It's a gorgeous film. I'm so excited to work on it. It's a drama. So I'll be recording that in the studio, hopefully in November. So that's ongoing. And then Ryan Murphy, who you may know his name, he produced American Horror Story and American Crime, OJ, Versace, all that stuff. I'm doing his next show on Netflix, which is called Hollywood.
Oh, right.
Yeah, okay. Which is really exciting. It's going to be amazing. And then I'm doing a show at Hulu called The Great, which is brilliant. Tony McNamara, who wrote The Favorite from last year, the film, this is his new show that he created. And it's basically The Favorite. It's a raucous, irreverent comedy set in 18th century Russia about Catherine the Great. And she is played by Elle Fanning brilliantly. And then Nicholas Hoult plays Peter the Great. So yeah, that's a really fun show. So I have like three period pieces right now, which is fun. One that takes place in the 1970s, one takes place in the 1940s, one takes place in the 1700s. So
awesome. Yes, I'm glad to see that Mac has actually got somebody else doing some of Ryan's shows as well.
Exactly. No, Mac was like, he has so much on his plate with so many shows. And so it's funny though, like Mac is a very dear friend. And so when I got the offer, or when I was approached, I felt like I had to call him and say, "Hey, just so you know, they're asking me to do this." And he was excited that it was a friend of his that was sort of coming on board that team.
I mean, Ryan's got so many shows out at the moment. It's not like Mac's short of work, is it really?
No, it's crazy.
I interviewed Mac a few weeks ago, and one of the things he always says, when we come to the last question, one of the things he always says when I ask sort of what would you like to work on? You know, what show would you like to work on? And he always says he wants to work on a sci-fi. And Mr. Robot is coming to an end, but Ishmael's next project looks like it's going to be a reboot of Battlestar Galactica, so I've got my fingers crossed for him that he lands that.
That would be amazing. He'd be so good at that. It'd be great, yeah.
We should wrap up with the usual last two questions that we always ask. So first question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I'm watching Succession.
Yeah, brilliant, yes.
Really enjoying it. I'm watching The Righteous Gemstones.
Oh, yes, we haven't had that yet. It's coming next year.
Hilarious. And I'm watching Unbelievable on Netflix, which really intense but really good.
Yeah, it's an incredible series, that.
Yeah, it is. So those are the three I'm actively watching right now, and they're all. I mean, there's so much great content. I mean, obviously there's a lot of bad stuff too, but there's so much good stuff. It's like everyone's talking about a show one week, and then the next week there's something just as good. You know?
Yeah, there's a crazy amount of stuff, and we're hitting that sort of season of everything returning as well. So, you know, and new stuff.
The Spy. I'm watching The Spy as well. Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh, yes. I haven't seen that yet, but yes. Okay.
It looks pretty interesting.
And lastly, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, what show would it be?
Think about that. You know, I mean, I feel like I'm in such a sweet spot right now where all the shows I'm working on are really strong shows, really different shows. Dramatic film and two dramatic shows right now. So I don't know if there's anything
particular genre you'd like to go for that you haven't tried.
I mean, just the drama stuff. You know, I'm just so enjoying, you know, as composers, we have so much, we're oftentimes capable of much more than we get the opportunity to express based on what we get hired on. And I'm really seeing a shift in that, which has been exciting. So I think like just more dramas like I have right now is really, I just so want to plug into that part of myself as a composer. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's lovely chatting with you again.
It's
always a pleasure, but I'm sure we'll do it again in 12 months or so when next thing comes out. So good luck with the second season of Carnival Row. I'm looking forward to seeing when you get to it. And good luck with the films and other stuff. So have a great day. I will talk to you probably in 12 months again.
Talk to you. Have a good year.
Cheers. Bye. So that was the interview with composer Nate Barr. Carnival Row is up on Amazon Prime right now. Go and watch it. It's a really good series. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's well worth watching. And this is coming back for a second season as well. Go and check it out. Here are some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. We have Riverdale coming back for its fourth season. That's on the 10th of October. I kind of dropped out of this, to be honest.
Let's hope this season makes sense.
Yeah,
I last one.
I really lost the whole role playing game thing.
D&G or something? Griffins and Gargoyles.
Yeah. That storyline got very silly, and I kind of dropped away from it. But it is now back for its fourth season. That's on the 10th of October on Netflix. You can go and find that. Young Sheldon is back for its third season. That's on the 10th of October as well. That's at 8:30 on E4. Insatiable is back for its second season. This is the dark, twisted revenge comedy. That's on the 11th of October on Netflix. El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie, that is coming on the 11th of October as well, as we were talking about earlier. We're doing a podcast for that, aren't we, later on?
Yes, look out for it on Sunday night.
Yeah, so that's on Entertainment Talk. We will be doing a podcast update on the Breaking Bad movie. Dynasty, third season of that, comes on the 12th of October, also to Netflix, which is the update of the classic 80s soap. So that's on the 12th of October. And Family Guy returns for its 18th season. That's on ITV2 on the 14th of October at 9 p.m. And then we have The Dublin Murders, which is the adaptation of Tanana French's internationally best-selling Dublin Murder Squad novels. That's coming on the 14th of October at 9 p.m. to BBC One. That's Dublin Murders. And lastly, The Good Doctor has a confirmed third season air date. That's coming to Sky Witness on the 15th of October at 9 p.m. And it's really, really good medical drama, well worth going to watch. So that's everything. We're starting to get things returning, as you can see.
I already have so much to do. So
yes, I know what you mean. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Well, speaking of Breaking Bad, I was a guest on a podcast yesterday called the Rewired podcast, and the focus of the podcast was Breaking Bad versus The Wire, just in like a general sense, and in different categories and whatnot. So I did that yesterday. I don't know when that podcast is going out, but when they do release it and do tell me, I'll be sure to post that on Twitter and Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at eTalkUK, so look out for that.
So cool. Well, yes, we are heading back into a lot of shows coming back, so there is a lot more podcasts coming out over on Entertainment Talk, including The Walking Dead, which me and Matt do. We're also going to be doing Watchmen from next week, I think. We're starting Watchmen. So
preview will be next week. The first episode is the week after.
We're starting previewing Watchmen from next week, so there's that coming up. For us, of course, there is lots and lots of news going up on geektown.co.uk throughout the weeks, and you can also check all the latest UK and US air date info. We have US air date info on there as well as the UK now. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter or on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Goodbye.